Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Wednesday, December 13, 2023. The United Nations Food Agency, WFP, warns of a looming hunger crisis in Sudan.
What is most concerning is that 5 million people are in emergency levels of hunger, just one step away from catastrophic levels of hunger. And what that means are these people, families, struggling to afford a basic meal a day. And this is only going to get worse.
And women's rights activists in South Sudan accuse the police of abuse.
I feel very bad and disappointed at the police. They forced me to sit down and said my trouser was too tight. So two of them immediately got a sharp object onto my trouser. I cried and shouted at them, but none wanted to listen to me.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The World Food Programme warns that millions of Sudanese are at risk of catastrophic hunger next year unless urgent food assistance is provided to people trapped in conflict zones in the country. The UN Food Agency is calling on the parties to Sudan's conflict to end the fighting to avert a hunger crisis next year. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
WFP says as the conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces enters its eighth month, 18 million people in Sudan are facing food insecurity during the harvest season, which is a time when food is usually the most available. WFP says that figure is more than double the number of food insecure people at the same time last year. Lenny Kinsley, the WFP spokesperson on Sudan, says millions of Sudanese already require food assistance to survive.
What is most concerning is that 5 million people are in emergency levels of hunger, just one step away from catastrophic levels of hunger. And what that means are these people, families, struggling to afford a basic meal a day. And this is only going to get worse as the lean season approaches, where they might not even be able to afford that.
Kinsley says the areas most affected by the hunger crisis are the conflict hotspots, including the capital Khartoum, the Kordofan region, and the Darfur region, especially West Darfur State. She says aid agencies, including the World Food Programme, find it difficult to deliver humanitarian assistance to people in these places due to ongoing fighting.
We can expect catastrophic levels of hunger during the lean season between May and October if we are not able to provide assistance and if WFP does not gain unfettered humanitarian access to these conflict hotspots where people are trapped by active fighting, making it extremely difficult for WFP to send aid deliveries through.
Kinsley says the main factors plunging the country into severe hunger are the ongoing conflict between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces, increased intercommunal violence, microeconomic crisis, skyrocketing food prices, and a poor harvest. To address the food shortages in the short term, Kinsley says WFP needs to urgently deliver food aid and nutrition interventions for children and mothers suffering from malnutrition.
And again, for that is required unfettered humanitarian access and for aid agencies to carry out their work abiding by the humanitarian principles. That is why WFP is calling on all parties to the conflict to adhere to their obligations under international humanitarian law so that we can deliver food assistance in the Sudanese people's greatest hour of need.
For addressing food insecurity in the long run, the fighting must end, says Kinsley, and agricultural production needs to increase, smallholder farmers must be supported, and skyrocketing food prices that drove food insecurity prior to the conflict need to be addressed. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
South Sudanese returnees at the Bulukat Transit Center in the Upper Nile State capital, Malakal, say they have nothing to eat. The head of a government task force responsible for receiving returnees and foreign nationals fleeing the conflict in Sudan says aid agencies provide food assistance for a limited period, but many of those displaced stay longer at the transit center. Mamer Abraham Court reports for VOA from Malakal.
Sarah Abraham, a 35-year-old widow taking care of seven children, says she and her family arrived at the transit center by boat nearly 2 months ago. Abraham says she and her children did not receive a token, which each internally displaced person must present to aid agencies to receive a food ration. She says she sold her clothes to raise money to feed her children, so she now has no clothes to wear. Abraham appeals to aid agencies to provide her family and other internally displaced persons food to save the lives of the children.
If the children are given nothing more than this, I don't have someone to go to or a place to go. The children I am working with have no father. Their father passed away.
41-year-old Veronica Guy is waiting for transportation to go to her final destination in the United States capital, Bentiu. Guy says she ran out of food several days ago and has been asking for help for more than 2 weeks without success.
There is nothing else at all. What should we eat? We are just saying we need the support, but we are not getting it.
35-year-old Nyakweka Bol Galwa, also a mother of seven, is asking for startup capital to begin a charcoal business to raise money to support her children in Malakal as she waits to go to Ayut. Mai Kong, chairperson of a state government task force responsible for receiving those fleeing the Sudan conflict, says aid agencies usually provide enough food for a week, but often the displaced stay longer than that at the transit center. He urges aid agencies to ensure the returnees and refugees do not stay longer than 7 days at the transit center.
And we want this message to be clear that if we are giving food for 7 days, we must also respect those days any returnees who are going out not to spend more than 7 days, because we can have definitely a quarreling with them.
Aaron Atkins, the Emergency Preparedness Coordinator at the International Organization for Migration, says his agency will continue to provide support to the returnees and refugees.
Services that are provided by lots of different partners among the humanitarians have been improving and continue to improve, and we will continue to provide these services as long as there is a need and as long as the funding comes in.
In September, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, said funding shortages have forced aid agencies to reduce assistance and to prioritize getting aid to the most vulnerable in South Sudan. UN OCHA said out of more than 7 million food insecure people in South Sudan, aid agencies could only provide assistance to slightly more than 3 million people. Funding shortages for aid agencies in South Sudan are being attributed to humanitarian needs in other parts of the world, including Ukraine. The South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission says since May it has registered more than 100,000 returnees at the Bulukat Transit Center. It says by the fourth week of November, it had sent more than 62,000 to their final destinations. Relief and Rehabilitation Commission official Kong says, on average, the transit center receives at least 600 new arrivals every day, a majority of whom travel from Sudan by boat. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwart in Malakal.
South Sudanese women's rights activists are condemning reports that some police officers in the capital, Juba, are undressing women or tearing their clothes in public, claiming they are indecently dressed. A police spokesperson says officers are required to maintain law and order, and any officer who undresses women is acting alone. Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Juba resident Jane Kiden says police officers tore her trousers a few days ago as she was going to the market. She says the unidentified officers claimed her pants were too tight and therefore indecent.
I feel very bad and disappointed at the police. How can they tear up someone's clothes in public and let you go home like that? They forced me to sit down and said my trouser was too tight. So two of them immediately got a sharp object and tore my trouser. I was ashamed and embarrassed. I cried and shouted at them, but none wanted to listen to me.
Right activist Nunu Diana says she witnessed the officers violently tearing up a young woman's dress on the streets about a week ago when she was going to work. Diana is urging officials to publicly inform citizens about any laws or policies the police are implementing regarding some sorts of dress code for women.
As a woman's rights activist, I condemn these actions and I call upon the different line ministries, the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, to come out clearly to tell the women where these laws are written that women cannot choose to dress the way they decide.
Diana says the officers' behaviors with Kiden proved that South Sudan is failing to defend and protect women.
These incidences that happened in Kuburabuba only tells us that as a country, we are not ready to protect the rights of women. Our security personnel are not informed about the rights of women. And that's why these acts have been perpetrated on women. And these actions also show that as a country, we are not moving forward to support women's rights.
Diana urges security operatives to respect the law and the rights of everyone. South Sudan National Police Service spokesperson Major General Daniel Justin says officers who harass or abuse women are acting individually and out of the law. Justin says police are not supposed to violate women's rights in the guise of implementing a dress code.
We only apprehend when someone breaks the law, and we are not mandated to judge, but the judges are the ones to judge. Our role as the police is to prove that you broke the law according to this section, and then we can open a case in the courts of law. So the court would look at the case we presented, and it is the court to either free or sentence you.
Justin urges citizens to immediately report to authorities any officer who harasses a woman. Last month, the South Sudan National Police Service arrested dozens of young men wearing dreadlocks in Juba in what it says was an effort to fight crime and end criminal gangs. That action galvanized many commentators in both mainstream and social media to criticize the police for targeting people wearing dreadlocks. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the upcoming elections in the DRC. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you share an inspirational quote and where you heard it from?
Heavy rains are a reminder of challenges in life. Never ask for a lighter rain. Just pray for better umbrella. I just came across it while I was reading something on social media.
This quote I just added from a church. The father was like, for those who seek, always find. And so fight endlessly for what you want for the future.
Friends are like buttons on the lift. They either bring you down or take you up. I heard it while I was in secondary school and it stuck since then.
وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهِ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَكْرَجًا Whoever fears Allah will have solution to whatever problems. It is from the Holy Quran.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Officials say The United States has struck hundreds of deals worth $14.2 billion with African nations since a summit between the two sides a year ago. British Robinson, coordinator for the U.S. administration's Prosper Africa Trade and Business Initiative, says the 547 new trade and investment agreements represent a 67% increase on 2022 in quality and value of closed deals. Carol Van Dam reports from Washington.
The 547 new trade and investment agreements represent a 67% increase on 2022 in the number and value of closed deals, according to British Robinson, coordinator for the U.S. administration's Prosper Africa Trade and Business Initiative. Robinson says the Presidential and National Security Initiative is aimed at strengthening strategic and economic partnerships by mobilizing two-way trade and investment flow, and young people are key to realizing that goal, she says.
The continent is home to the world's youngest population, an asset that creates significant opportunities for viable business deals that create jobs and foster shared prosperity.
Judd Devermont, President Joe Biden's top Africa advisor, says it has been a record-setting year for U.S.-Africa relations, with the United States following through on its commitment to invest some $55 billion over 3 years.
As we wind down 2023, we have already delivered on more than 40% of this commitment. In fact, Felix, by the end of year two, we anticipate surpassing 70% of our goal.
Devermont and Robinson were speaking at a virtual media briefing yesterday, marking the one-year anniversary of the Africa Leaders Summit in Washington, where Biden pledged to go all in on the continent. The announcement comes as Washington works to deepen its engagement with Africa, where China has been expanding its influence with infrastructure investment, loans, and other moves. Devermont says Africa is not only important economically, but politically, adding that the U.S. has been pushing for more African voices on the world stage for some time now.
President Biden last year called for the African Union to become a permanent member of the G20, and in September we proudly welcomed this development. We're now advocating for a third seat for the for Sub-Saharan Africa on the IMF board, and of course we reiterate our call for permanent representation for Africa at the UN Security Council.
Jonathan Pratt, the State Department's Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of African Affairs, was asked about investment and trade in countries of conflict or other crises like Sudan.
The goals of the AFCFTA to unite 1.3 billion people in a single market and to create a nominal GDP that's larger than India's is a huge boon. And in that process, harmonizing regulations, reducing trade and non-trade barriers, that will benefit all countries, whether they are experiencing crisis or not.
Devermont says in places like Niger, one of several countries to be hit by military coups and violence on the continent, the U.S. is prioritizing peace through negotiations. He says the U.S. is also looking at the underlying drivers of conflict and is investing in new approaches, including elevating its focus on elections and corruption. Carol Van Dam for VOA News, Washington.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's Electoral Commission says President Felix Tshisekedi is seeking re-election along 23 other candidates next Wednesday. They include Nobel Peace Prize winner Denis Mukwege and the runner-up in the 2018 presidential election Martin Fayulu. John Mukum Mbako is a Brady Presidential Distinguished Professor of Economics and John Hopkins Hinckley Fellow at Weber State University. He is also a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. In discussing the election with Yehia Zuhib, he says the opposition is strong but fragmented, greatly favoring the incumbent.
I think that the incumbent, Felix
Tshisekedi.
Yes, most Congolese are not very happy with his performance during the last few years, since 2018 when he became president. That election was considered unfair, and a lot of people in Congo believe that that election was stolen from Martin Fayulu. The Catholic Church in Congo actually believe that Martin Fayulu was the one who won the election, but that the outgoing president, Joseph Kabila, had manipulated the process to bring in someone he could control from the background and continue to influence power in Congo, and that was Felix. And so that is a problem that still continues to affect Felix today.
How about the country's economy? Professor, couldn't that be a factor in the election?
The Congolese economy has a lot of problems, and that is one thing that voters in 2023 are thinking about. I think for most Congolese, the main issue, especially for people who live in the urban areas, young people in the urban areas, is unemployment. The unemployment rate is very high. Extreme poverty is a significant problem. Then you have food inflation, which was exacerbated by the war in Ukraine, and also COVID. So these problems are going to be serious issues for the incumbent president. However, during the last couple of years, Mr. Tshisekedi has introduced universal free primary education. And many people in Congo look at that as something of a great achievement on his part. In addition, he has he's offering free medical care, free health care, to women who deliver children in public hospitals, something that, so those two things work in his favor. Now, the third thing that works in his favor is the fact that the opposition is quite divided. You have very strong opposition candidates. And so what is going to happen is that those candidates might divide the vote and allow the incumbent to win. And so if the candidates, this very strong candidate, this very strong opposition candidate, if they had sat together and decided to combine their efforts and put in just one candidate, I think that would have made the elections very, very competitive. So you have Moise Katumbi, who was the former governor of Katanga province. During the time he was governor, he did a lot of good things there. He improved the economy significantly, improved the tax collection system significantly, and provided a lot of economic development in that region. In addition to that, he is the owner of a football club that is very popular in DRC. And so he is viewed very positively, not only in the province of Katanga, but also throughout the country. Then you have Martin Fayulu, who is believed to have won the 2018 election. He is a former ExxonMobil executive. And you have Dr. Denis Mukwege, the 2018 Nobel Prize winner. He is well known for his humanitarian activities. He's done a lot of work in helping women fight sexual violence, especially in the eastern part of Congo.
There are 24 candidates in the field, including Denis Mukwege, the Nobel Peace Prize winning gynecologist, as well as Martin Fayulu, former the oil executive from whom the presidency was widely seen to have been stolen in 2018. There are 24 candidates, but it's a fragmented opposition. In cases like that, it greatly favors the incumbent. One more thing, Professor. Anzuluni, one of the candidates, Floribert Anzuluni, actually claims 15 of the candidates were created by the regime.
Well, it is possible, because this is a practice that is quite common in many countries in Africa, where the incumbent tries to divide the opposition by creating non-viable opposition candidates so that they could siphon votes away. And this is a big problem in Congo, where you don't have a second round of election, where the person who gets the majority of the votes, regardless of how much the majority is, even if it is under 50%, that person will go on to become president without a second round of votes. And so under those conditions, the fragmented opposition is very favorable to the incumbent.
That's John Mukumbako, a Brady Presidential Distinguished Professor of Economics. He was speaking with my colleague Yahia Suhib. In a sign that the United States is getting increasingly concerned over the number of civilian casualties from Israel's military campaign in Gaza, President Joe Biden delivered a public rebuke to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, even as he maintains his staunch support for Israel. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kuswara has this report.
Another market destroyed in Gaza, this one in the Jabalia refugee camp. The level of civilian casualties is making U.S. President Joe Biden increasingly concerned.
We have made it clear to the Israelis and are aware that the safety of innocent Palestinians is still of great concern. And so the actions they're taking must be consistent with attempting to do everything possible to prevent innocent Palestinian civilians from being hurt, murdered, killed, lost, etc.
Israel is losing international support over its indiscriminate bombings, Biden said during a campaign appearance earlier Tuesday, his sharpest public criticism. According to a White House transcript, he said Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu needs to change his coalition and empower the Palestinian Authority to become a partner in the peace process. He singled out Israel's far-right National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gavir, who opposes a two-state solution. Biden's comments came as 153 countries voted overwhelmingly in support of a UN resolution demanding a ceasefire. 10 countries opposed the measure, while 23 abstained. Riyad Mansour is Palestinian permanent observer to the United Nations.
Our duty is to try to save the lives who are still alive by having this resolution adopted and by forcing Israel to comply with it, and those who are shielding Israel to comply with the global consensus.
The vote followed a similar UN Security Council resolution Friday that failed due to a U.S. veto, a position that critics say damages Washington's interests beyond the Middle East. Former U.S. diplomat who resigned in protest over U.S. policy in Israel, Josh Paul, via Skype.
But also where we are arguing, for example, in the United Nations to gain the support of the Global South for our condemnations, our just condemnations of Russia's abhorrent invasion of Ukraine. We are also going to lose votes if we are seen to be hypocritical, if we are seen to be walking away from our values.
General Assembly resolutions are non-binding but carry political weight. Richard Gowan, UN Director of the International Crisis Group.
UN officials, the majority of UN member states, are simply looking for every means possible to create a sense of moral pressure on the US to change its posture.
Israel and its supporters say a ceasefire will only benefit Hamas, allowing them to regroup for future attacks on Israel. Julie Raymond, Managing Director of Policy and Political Affairs at the advocacy group, the American Jewish Committee, via Skype.
It's allowing Hamas to have a legitimacy that it hasn't earned. It's giving trust to terrorist leaders who have proven unequivocally that they are not trustworthy.
Following Hamas' October 7 attacks in Israel that killed at least 1,200, responding strikes by Israel in Gaza have killed more than 18,000 people by Palestinian count in the bloodiest campaign of the decades-long conflict. Patsy Wida-Kuswara, VOA News.
And that's all we have for you this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Nakpana by Kennedy. I am your host, Nabil Biagio in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Gwen Uten, and engineer, Bill Andrade, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Na 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 na
vocabulary.